Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hi, I'm Danny J.
And I'm Jill Coleman.
Welcome to the Best Life Podcast.
Here, we talk about everything from success, money, relationships and entrepreneurship, to productivity, honest communication, positive psychology, and how to cultivate an abundance mindset.
Make money, travel the world, deepen your relationships, live full out.
This is the best life.
Hey, besties, this is Danny J, your co-host and solo host today. I'm doing a solo, and this won't be a long episode, but it's something that I just learned today and I wanted to share. If you haven't listened to some of the episodes that I've done on kind of my personal story, you might want to go back and listen to them, particularly the ones on ketamine, depression, and how I got off my medication. And how I got off my meds was relatively recently. And I'm going to share something I learned today from an integration session that I had with someone, from MindBloom. And that's a company that I've partnered with to do ketamine sessions. So little background real quick. This podcast is not sponsored by MindBloom. They did partner with me to do some Instagram posts. And so in exchange, I was able to go through, and I'm still in the middle of going through their six-session ketamine protocol. And while I've gotten off my meds and I feel really great, I've read so much research on ketamine and how it helps treatment-resistant depression, grief, PTSD, so many other things. And I did a few sessions back in 2022, and I was feeling a little, not quite off, but just feeling like I could have used a tune-up end of 2023, beginning of this year. So it couldn't have come at a perfect time. I really wanted to give it a full go. I had never done a full treatment series. And so I started my ketamine treatments with them, and I just had treatment number three. And part of their program, and this, like I said, is not sponsored by them, nor is it even meant to sell them, but I am really shouting from the rooftops after today. I got so much out of it, and I can't wait to share this. But part of the program is an integration session. So you get to meet with a coach. First, you meet with someone who is a medical professional who approves you, makes sure that you don't have any, things that they need to know about that you shouldn't be taking the medicine. They prescribe it, send it to your house, and then you follow up with how the dosage was. And in my case, I needed to get a higher dosage. And then after the third session, you meet back with your coach just to go over what things might be coming up with you. And what was interesting for me was the first two sessions, I didn't get a whole lot out of, at least I didn't feel like it because the medicine wasn't strong enough. And the first session, I really didn't get much of any, but the coach told me that it's still working on those neuroreceptors in your brain. And so you're still getting that neuroplasticity. So long and short of it is, you can also look up this episode of the adoption episode. It's early on, maybe episode 18, but when I was 16 years old, I had a little girl that I placed for adoption. And it was a very difficult decision to make, something really hard to do, and something I share more often now, but for many years I never talked about it. I had friends who met me after who never knew I had a baby. Probably for the first 12 years of her life, I didn't tell anyone. And then, you know, I was an adult and I maybe told somebody in confidence here and there, but I had a best friend who I never told. And I shared also in the ayahuasca episode in 2019 that when I went to do ayahuasca, I had this really profound evening and ceremony where I realized that I never got to grieve when I was that young girl. And I was this 16-year-old girl, and I got to like be my, I think I was 37 at the time, my 37-year-old self like held my younger self and just let her cry and grieve. And I even talked about this on my TED Talk. If you go to YouTube, you can type in Danny J TED Talk and hear a little bit about that. So what's come up for me recently was really interesting. I'm working on a documentary loosely based on my life and really just about family and connection. And part of the documentary, I'm trying to get footage and, you know, pictures and film of when I was younger. And I had some VHS tapes that I got digitized a couple years ago. I actually got them digitized for my TED Talk, and I just wanted to grab a photo, like a still photo. I was trying to find any photo of me pregnant, which I didn't really have, but I knew there were some videos. And so I got these videos digitized, and I think, to be honest, I don't know why I didn't watch them, but I kind of think I do know why. I was just too scared and I didn't want to see it, but I kept the audio off and I scrolled just far enough to get a screenshot of a picture, and that was it. And as I was looking for these videos to send to the producer, I decided to watch. And it was really hard to watch, I'll say that. And Courtney, my daughter, we've since reconnected, and she is the producer of this show. So if you don't know that part of the story, it's also, I think, in episode 18 and 19. She came over, she moved to Vegas last year, and she came over because I was going to watch her dog. And I said, hey, I have this video, and I shared it with her. And we both watched, and we both cried. And I know we each had our own reasons for crying. And I think it was profound to watch and see this version of me that I know it's me, and I was there, but it feels like someone else so long ago. It feels like a completely different person. It looks like a different person. And it was interesting to have reflected back to me some of Courtney's thoughts of one of the things she said was, you know, you hear the story, you tell the story about being 16, but it's so different when you see it, when you see how young you were. And she's like, you were just a baby. And I could just, I'm like, I was just a baby. My nephew, he's almost 15 this year, and that's how old I was when I got pregnant. And I could see like this 15-year-old teenager face and this, and I could see my face like that. And it was just wild. And I think what really kind of broke me open was my mom was doing the videotaping. And I, you know, I'm a teenager, and I was like, get the camera out of my face. But she had taken the camera at some point and was just filming the baby. And she was talking to the baby. She was talking to Courtney. And it was hard to hear because the audio quality wasn't great, but, you know, she was just saying how she'd miss her and she was so precious. And it brought up so much compassion and sadness and just wishing that we had different tools back then to process what we were going through. And since that night, which was about 5 or 6 nights ago, I've been feeling really weepy and just really having this sadness come up. And I had my integration session with my coach, and I said, hey, and she asked how I was doing. I'm like, I'm doing okay. I'm just a little sad. And I'm feeling this sort of way. And she asked if it was okay to tell her. And I said, well, this is what happened. I watched this video, and I started crying, expressing it, and especially talking about my mom's part. And she said that one of the things the ketamine does is maybe if at a time you're not allowed to experience certain emotions, that it kind of breaks open those boxes and allows you to feel the emotions. And during the treatment and during the session, I didn't feel any of this, but she said this word, which blew my mind and I've never heard before. She said, it sounds like what you have is disenfranchised grief. And I have been studying grief for the last 2 years, just really digging and researching and learning just because of how I process my divorce and how I process my mom's death. And it's been really intriguing to me. And I never, and 2 years of just reading so much, I never seen this word, disenfranchised grief. And on Google, it says a grief or loss that's not openly acknowledged, socially validated, or publicly mourned. In other words, a loss where society fails the griever by simply not recognizing their right to grieve. And I was like, oh my God, this. Because when I placed that baby for adoption, I really felt like I was not allowed to grieve. Anytime I showed any kind of emotion, any kind of sadness, it was pushed with, well, these are the consequences of your actions. And this is, you know, this was your choice. This is what happens. You have sex, you get pregnant. These are what happens. And you get to deal with that. Like, you don't get to be sad about this kind of thing. And I was chatting with the videographer of the documentary, and she had asked me, she's pregnant right now. And she said, did you go through postpartum? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I went through postpartum because I don't know what was true sadness, what was hormones, and what was grief. And it was all shoved down and pushed away that I wasn't really allowed to express any of it. And I know there was even a time that I didn't cry for a number of years. Like I couldn't even access. It was like I shoved all of that down into a box, which is crazy now because I could cry literally over anything. I see dogs on Instagram or someone loses their pet and I lose my shit. So it's crazy to think that I was so cold and so turned off. And now looking back, I'm like, yes, of course, because I had to. It was survival and it was required that I wasn't allowed to show that I had any emotion. And so I wanted to share this because one, if I never heard of this and I've been studying grief for the last 2 years, I'm sure many of you had never heard of it either. And two, to validate these types of grief. And so in this integration session with the coach, she said, I actually do a grief circle and it's, you know, right after the session if you'd like to join. And I said, I don't know, it feels so weird to join a grief circle to grieve something that happened, you know, almost 30 years ago that I'm not actively grieving. And she said, you would be surprised how many people have this, you know, similar kind of thing. So I looked at my calendar and I had some time and I go, you know, fuck it, I'll do it. So I joined the grief circle and there was about 8 of us there. And I'm not going to share anybody's stories, but I am going to say a lot of brave people showed up to that call. And it was really, really powerful for me to hear their stories and to see the types of grief that affect people for a long time. And I wanted to talk about the different examples of disenfranchised grief because these are something that maybe you've experienced and never felt validated for. And I think one thing that grief really needs is a witness, that someone can see you for the pain that you're going through or that you're not allowed to express or share. So I looked up a lot of things. I kind of came up with a list. And this is just for any person who've gone through some of these and maybe needs to have a word to recognize. So another example, and I'm going to go through about 10, 12 examples, is loss of a pet. Other pet owners get it, and I get this so deeply, but society doesn't always recognize the impact of losing a pet. And maybe a dog, because a lot of us are dog people, but, you know, maybe losing a bird or some other less recognized pet. And a lot of times we minimize the grief associated with that. I know I had a dog that my parents weren't really pet people. So they kind of were like, yeah, get over it. And y'all, I have experienced more sadness over losing some of my pets than people I know.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Another one is, and a lot of women can recognize this, and I think it's talked about more today than it was years ago, but a miscarriage or a stillbirth. My partner's mom had a stillbirth in 1981, and I think that she never was able to really grieve that baby. And it's one of those things that, you know, maybe the year goes by, their birthday comes and goes, and no one else recognizes it but you. You remember when that birthday was supposed to be, or the day that the baby died. So this is another one. And miscarriage too, you know, some people say that, you know, how can you grieve if that life never existed? And sometimes the disenfranchised grief is also about things that haven't happened, right? The loss of something you never had. Another one I think is really interesting is, I found on a list, was the death of an ex-spouse. And I noticed this because my grandma passed away and she had an ex-husband. And I really wondered what he might have felt. And I've thought about this personally too. My ex-husband had a heart attack a couple years ago, and he called to let me know. And I remember thinking, like, what if he had died? And how would I have felt about that? And I think there is an interesting grief, even though they're not in your life, you had a part, you shared a big part of your life. And I have a friend of mine who lost her ex-spouse, who she still had the children. And so it can be super complex, and society may not really fully understand or acknowledge the grief from the surviving ex-partner, especially if they've moved on to new relationships or are remarried, but there's still a piece that's gone. Another one, speaking of spouses and partners, and this is a really interesting and again complex, and this is so fascinating, is the loss of a relationship that doesn't quite fit societal norms. So let's say like an affair. You know, Jill shared this in our affair episode, and it's so wild but real, is that when she found out about her ex-husband's affair, it was because he had basically been dumped by his girlfriend and was grieving the loss of that relationship, even though he was married. And there's that grief that you almost have to hide because that was not supposed to be a relationship, but it's a real thing. And it's fascinating how there are all these different kinds of grief that sometimes we have to shove down, push away, and yet they're so real to the person experiencing them. Another one is suicide. Grieving someone who lost a loved one by suicide can be disenfranchised due to just the stigma and judgment around it. And survivors might feel really isolated and reluctant to share their grief in that situation. And we've talked about these too, loss of a job or career. You know, most of society just thinks like, oh, get a new job, but especially a career, you know, maybe you're an athlete or you were a nurse for 20 years and suddenly you can't work, or you had some kind of illness or injury and you can't, and people might feel a lot of shame for feeling that loss, but it's so big, so, so big. In fact, I think that even retiring can create this big loss where you might have really identified with your career and what you did. And so this can also be something that we are really grieving and struggling with, but it's not really something that people aren't sending you flowers and they're not like, hey, how are you doing? And so you're struggling with that alone. Another one is childhood abuse or neglect. And this generally happens later when we start to maybe realize maybe we have our own kids or something. But we start to realize the loss that we had growing up and what we didn't get to experience. And the grief of anything that we missed and how we were treated. And of course, all of this grief is subjective. It's also cultural, and there's so many individual differences. But again, learning this today just blew my mind. And it's not that it's so new. It's just a new term for me. But the fact that there is a term for it made me feel seen. Like, oh, this is something that I experienced that I pushed away and that I didn't really get a chance to express. And I just have a few more. One of them is loss through adoption. Birth parents and adoptees. You know, myself, I'm the birth parent, experienced this grief related to adoption because as society kind of is like, well, this is the choice you made, so that must be what you want. But also adoptees who may experience the grief of one, maybe if they never met their adoptive parents and they really wanted to, whether they can't find them or they passed away. And two, the idea of, you know, what would it have been like, that possible life of growing up with a different family and not knowing. And so that is something that's a shared, that could be a shared experience through a lot of adoptees as well. And not all, again, this is very individual. Some don't feel this at all and some do. Another big one that I had is the loss of cultural religious identity. So if you grew up in a certain ideology, religion, and you find yourself questioning or what is the word now? Leaving the church that you were brought up in. And it might be a huge core aspect of yourself and your identity and your beliefs. And to figure out what those are is really, really big and scary and sad. And potentially you're losing friends and family if you walked away from something that they believe and they think that you're, you know, following Satan's path and you can't be with them anymore. So that's a big one. And then kind of two more that I want to throw in here is grief for a family member who hasn't died, but an estranged family member. So I know I have so many people I've talked to who have a parent or a sibling who's alive, but they're, for lack of a better word, dead to them. They cannot talk to them anymore. They have no contact, whether it's because it's abusive or it's just not healthy. But grieving for this family member that they cannot have a relationship with, especially, you know, a parent. I know for 4.5 years, my mom and I didn't talk. And I kind of had this moment of grief of like, I'm never going to have that relationship with my mom that I always wanted to, and grieving that. And I know that that's very common for many people. And it's also something I want to validate and share. And I know I've heard people do ceremonies where they hold a funeral for their parent or the person they don't talk to who's still alive, but they, you know, bury them, cut the cords, have some kind of ceremony so they can let them go. And that's something that, again, it's these kind of griefs that it's not really recognized in society. You're not getting cards sent to your house. You're not having people ask if you're okay, and you're not okay. And you're having maybe an experience just as deep as losing someone, but you're not able to share it with anyone. And so it feels heavy and shameful and big. And then the last one I'll throw in here is grief following a traumatic event. So people who've experienced trauma like surviving a natural disaster or being a victim of crime because they might not be fully acknowledged. And I'll even say this, like, I can throw this in, like, military, they call it, victim guilt, or not victim guilt, survivor guilt. So you might be feeling grief because of natural disaster, maybe losing your home, and maybe 9/11, like, God forbid, that whole thing and how scary that was. And then maybe even some guilt for living through something like that, or living if you're in the military and your friends got killed and you didn't, or being a victim of a crime, any kind of crime where you're struggling with the processes and the processing and who you were before that and who you are after. You know, a lot of victims of crime, it changes you. It changes you. And so you might have been happy-go-lucky, never scared, and then suddenly you're afraid of everyone, afraid of everything, won't leave the house, and you're a different person and you're grieving that piece of you used to be. So I wanted to share all of these because, again, I learned this. I thought it would be good to share. I also got so much out of Mind Bloom so far, my 3 out of the 6 sessions, even though those first two were a little mild. The integration alone, and then I didn't know about these circles, the grief circles, there's women's circles, there's these basically just group support, you know, support group. And I haven't done any kind of support group for a long time, and I didn't feel like I needed it, to be honest. I was like, let's just see what this is all about. But it was really wonderful. So again, this isn't sponsored, but I partnered with them to do some Facebook posts so I could, I mean, Instagram posts. So I basically was able, I didn't get the treatment for free. I had to pay for the medicine, but it was, you know, nominal. But if you do want to try it, I highly recommend it. If you go to mindbloom.com/DannyJ100, it's DannyJ100, all lowercase, you can get $100 off and use the coupon code DannyJ100. If you have any questions on it, please ask me. And obviously this, if this resonates with you, awesome. If it doesn't, I feel like it, to be honest, I don't think there's anybody that it won't resonate with. After listing every single one of those things, I feel like somebody has gone through something like this. And I just want to say, I see it. And I know that there's been parts of my grief where I just needed to be witnessed. I needed someone to see the pain I was in. And that 16-year-old girl needed someone to see her. And while nobody saw her then, I see her now. And I'm processing that and allowing for that and feeling it. And while it, like, it hurts and, you know, like, I'm teary right now, but it feels good to feel it now. And I know you have to feel it to heal it. So I want to just share this whole thing and my story just to give you permission to that. If anything on that list, anything not on the list, I know I didn't think of everything. I tried to think of as many things as I could. But I really want to give you permission to feel the grief for those things and to be okay to not be okay and to be sad about some of those things and to feel it, to heal it and process it. And if ketamine therapy might be of interest to you, I would definitely look it up. I would say just that session alone to talk to someone and to have those group sessions available to me feel like such an amazing tool that I never would have tapped into and I really didn't think I needed. And I was so happy that I did it today. And I'll probably go back, and not even for myself. I felt so good supporting others and hearing their stories. Like, that was really powerful. So anyway, I hope this lands for some of you today. I know that not all my episodes need to be so heavy, but this one is a little bit. Anyway, would love to hear from you. You can always go to thebestlifepodcast.com, type in or click on the episodes if you want to hear some of those ones I mentioned. You could type in search keywords like depression, ketamine, that kind of stuff, and find these episodes I'm talking about. You can also find our private Facebook group, share anything you'd like to in there. We love shares and would love to hear your thoughts. And you can also find me on Instagram at dannyj.com and would love to hear from you. So hope you all have a great one and we'll see you on the next episode.